Hey there, sports history fan. Arnie Chapman here from the Sports History Network. Now, before you jump into this episode, I wanted to share with you an exciting giveaway we have going on with Home Field Apparel. We have a digital $50 gift card to homefieldapparel.com for one lucky fan of the Sports History Network. All you got to do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways to sign up. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Starting in 1991 and ending in 2000, the National Hockey League went through a large expansion, adding teams in San Jose, Tampa Bay, Ottawa, South Florida, Anaheim, Nashville, Atlanta, Columbus, and Minnesota. Tampa, of course, has experienced great success, winning three Stanley Cups. Anaheim won a cup. San Jose, Ottawa, Florida, and Nashville have each played in the Stanley Cup Finals. Columbus is on solid footing, and Minnesota, well, it's experienced its ups and downs in the Stanley Cup playoffs. However, there was one team that was doomed to fail from the start and now calls its home Winnipeg. And next, on Sports Forgotten Heroes, we're going to take a look back at the short history of a team that was never able to get its act together and build any success on the ice, the Atlanta Thrashers.
This is Sports Forgotten Heroes, a tribute to the stars who shape the games we love to watch and the games we love to play. Stars who provided us with many thrills, but when their time was up, they faded away. We'll take a look back at their spectacular careers, their moments of fame, even if it was just for one season or just one game. And now, here's your host, Warren Rogan.
Hello and welcome to Sports Forgotten Heroes Episode 113, The Atlanta Thrashers. Since I started this podcast back in 2017, every once in a while I have deviated from the normal subject matter of talking about a forgotten hero of the past in favor of looking back at a forgotten team, a team no longer with us, a team that might have experienced a few successes, but ultimately left its home for one reason or another. Today, the Atlanta Thrashers. I examine what happened to the Thrashers with Curtis Walker, who penned a very interesting look at what was going on behind the scenes from day one in his book, Broken Wings. A very revealing tale of how hiring the wrong person, at least in Curtis's view, can doom a franchise in so many ways. And when it's a team just starting out, that doom can lead to extraordinary failures and ultimately cause a team to disband or, in the case of the Thrashers, relocate. Interestingly enough, and Curtis will get into this a little more, the Thrashers moved to Winnipeg in a very controversial way. And while so many in this Western Canadian city were thrilled to get their Jets back after the original Winnipeg Jets left for Arizona, many didn't realize, recognize, or just ignored the fact that they were paying for their team through taxes. A story for another time, but a story we touch upon. Now, before we get into all of it, I want to let you all know that Sports Forgotten Heroes is a proud member of the Sports History Network. This is a conglomerate of many different types of sports history podcasts. Check it out. There's something for everyone at sportshistorynetwork.com. Also, please visit my website, sportsfh.com. Here, I have more information about my guests and the forgotten heroes I talk about with them. Many have written terrific books, and you can find links to each of these books if you'd like to order them and support the authors. Again, that's sportsfh.com. You can also see a calendar of upcoming episodes, and please send me an email and let me know how I'm doing. Suggest a topic for a future podcast or submit a question. Send your email to sportsfh.info@gmail.com. Again, sportsfh.info@gmail.com. Hey, don't forget to subscribe to Sports Forgotten Heroes and to give the podcast a like. Follow Sports Forgotten Heroes on Twitter at SportsFHeroes. I make posts there every single day. And look for the Sports Forgotten Heroes page on Facebook. As always, thanks to all of you for your support. Now, let's get into today's show with my guest, Curtis Walker. And joining me now on Sports Forgotten Heroes is Curtis Walker. Curtis, thanks for joining me.
Good to be here.
Hey, man, before we get into your book and the Thrashers themselves, I do have a few other questions that I'd like to start with. The first being this, and this is a tough one. Do you think the Atlanta Flames are a more recognizable brand than the Atlanta Thrashers? And by that, I mean this. I think, on a personal level, more people remember the Flames than they do the Thrashers. I don't know if you agree with that, but if you do, why?
That's an interesting question. I had never really thought of that. But, you're probably right in that because the Flames moved to Calgary, they're still an existing NHL franchise, and so when they hear Flames, they think, well, okay, you know, where did they come from? Atlanta. So, whereas the Thrashers were just so bad and so under the radar, it's almost like they weren't even in the NHL. It's like they were you have in Europe with relegation. You're probably right.
Yeah, I find that interesting because, you know, obviously the Flames moved decades ago, whereas the Thrashers were a team here in the 2000s. And it's just, when I tell people that I'm doing a podcast about the Thrashers, they look at me funny. I go, well, do you remember the Atlanta Flames? They go, sure. I said, well, there was a team that was in Atlanta after the Flames, and they played in Atlanta for a longer period than the Flames. And people just don't remember the team. I find it really interesting. When the NHL decided to expand in the 1990s, it went like this. First came the San Jose Sharks in 1991, and then they were followed by the Tampa Bay Lightning and Ottawa Senators, then the Florida Panthers, and then the Mighty Ducks of Anaheim, then the Nashville Predators, then the Atlanta Thrashers, and then the last two teams of that expansion were the Columbus Blue Jackets and the Minnesota Wild. Of course, just a few years ago, Vegas joined the NHL, and now Seattle. The expansion draft protocol for Vegas and Seattle was much different than what all of those other teams were able to do. Do you think the NHL took a cue from how poor the talent pool was for those 90s expansion teams in order to give Vegas and Seattle a better chance at respectability sooner?
You're probably right. Although I think the NHL went too far, at least in the Vegas case. I don't really follow the NHL much today, but it really seems like they went too far with Vegas. But in the case of, specifically in the case of the Thrashers, it really wasn't the case of the NHL harming, or not giving the Thrashers a chance. The Thrashers didn't give the Thrashers a chance.
Yeah. you made that clear.
I think fans everywhere understand that in an expansion team, you're not going to get a winner right off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Vegas was an anomaly. You know, and even fans in Atlanta specifically understood that. They had great support in their early years because, you know, people were happy to have NHL hockey. They understood the you know, growing process of you know building a team and everything. The problem for the Thrashers was that they drafted so horribly over the years, and you know the trades and free agent signings were just you know the Don Waddell's judgment. I mean, I think half of your listeners probably could have done a better job being the general manager. And one thing that really struck me, you know, in addition to all the bad personnel moves, is that actually two things. First of all, what talent they had, they were just not able to develop. I mean, they had such an awkward relationship with their farm team.
Mm-hmm.
The coach with the Chicago Wolves wasn't even running the same systems that they were running in Atlanta, so that you know players would come up and they wouldn't even be, they'd hardly be prepared. My other point is that there were so many injuries they had, and I'm not just talking about just fluke things like a guy break a leg or the tragic situation with Dan Snyder. It's so many of the soft tissue injuries, the hamstring and hamstrings pulls with goaltenders. I mean that just seemed to it was like there was a black cloud hanging over Phillips Arena. But you know, I'll use Kari Lehtinen as an example, one of their high draft choices.
Mm-hmm.
He came to Atlanta. He didn't have good work habits. He missed so much time with. Again, just hamstring and groin pulls. They ended up trading him to Dallas for a sack of magic beans, and the management there works with him. They crack the whip and they get him to work hard, and he becomes one of the most reliable goaltenders in the league for the next decade. And that's just an example of what of how the. The Thrashers management was just, they just didn't care.
Yeah, they didn't have a good training staff.
And again, the responsibility lies directly with the general manager.
Right. So your
book, he's the one who hires them and sets the tone. That's the buck stops here.
Right. And your book, Broken Wings, which by the way I loved it, no holds barred. You came out swinging first. If I read correctly, and earlier you said you don't follow the league too much anymore, but you were a fan of the original Winnipeg Jets, and that team is now, the Arizona Coyotes. And you weren't overly thrilled when the Jets left for Arizona. And when the NHL announced that the Thrashers would be moving from Atlanta to Winnipeg to become the new Winnipeg Jets, again, you weren't overly thrilled, and you had some pretty good reasons. Explain why. What did the local government do to make moving to Winnipeg an enticing proposition for ownership, and what burden was placed on the taxpayers of Winnipeg?
Well, it was more than an enticement. I mean, it was a complicated scheme, but the government effectively bought the franchise for private ownership. It wasn't it was a scheme that involved because in Manitoba they have government run casinos that where the government gets the proceeds. They ended up shutting down some of those casinos and put up another one. And instead of having the revenue from that casino go to the government, a government that's nearly bankrupt, they instead ended up going to the ownership. And they came up with this song and dance, saying it helped for the arena. But I mean, the same ownership group owns the arena and owns the team. So, and for all intents and purposes, it was the government buying the franchise. And it's the government is putting in about $15 million a year for the team. And of course, it's costing taxpayers a lot more because that's borrowed money.
Well, that's yeah, I can understand why some people, especially if they're not hockey fans, would be so upset. And even some hockey fans, such as yourself, would be so upset because that's not what you bargained for. And we're not talking about, a city the size of a Montreal, a city the size of a Toronto, a New York, a Chicago. This is a small town, Winnipeg, and to put such a burden on the local population, it is quite a burden.
Yes. And, it's it also sickened me because when the Jets left in 1996, I mean, I was among many fans who shed tears. I mean, it was a horrible thing to have to lose. To lose our team, but when the Thrashers were being taken out of Atlanta, I felt that same pain for them because my tax dollars were being lifted from my pocket to cause that the same pain on fans in Georgia, just like the same pain that we in Winnipeg felt at the time, and it still burns me to this day.
Yeah, for the most part, when a city loses a team, for the most part, it's almost like a death in the family. It's a tough pill to swallow. Of course, there have been some teams that have left a city and the city really didn't care. They didn't really care for the team to begin with, but definitely not the case in Winnipeg with the Jets. Curtis, obviously, the Thrashers failed in Atlanta, and you point a finger of responsibility largely in the direction of the team's general manager, Don Waddell. Now, I don't think you have general disdain for Waddell as a person. Rather, you look at him more in the light of incompetence when it comes to hockey in evaluating talent, evaluating team structure, evaluating coaching, and I guess hockey acumen as a whole. So talk about that, how you believe Waddell was not the right person to put this team, the Thrashers, together, and how that ultimately, years in the making, led to Atlanta relocating to Winnipeg, even in the earliest of years of the Thrashers organization, that this team was sort of doomed to failure.
Well, yeah, I mean, Waddell did some, he really tried hard. I mean, I don't, as you pointed out, from everything I've heard, he's one of the finest gentlemen in the game. But he just didn't get the job done. And I mentioned already about the the injuries, the which again, when it's happened so often, it's just from lack of training and all that. Again, that's his responsibility. The drafting was just even teams with large budgets need to be able to get good, solid talent from the draft. And if he wasn't picking in the top five, pretty much it was, he pretty much got nothing out of the draft. I mean, Andre Pavelec, I think, was the only second round pick that ever made an impact in the NHL. And then pretty much everything beyond that was, the number of guys that actually helped the Thrashers beyond round two, you could probably count on the fingers of one hand.
Yeah.
His trades were just, sometimes, you know, even a squirrel, you know, blind squirrel finds an acorn, but, his judgment was just, was just horrible. But what I think the people that really deserve the blame is the people at the Atlanta Spirit Group, the second ownership group to take over from Ted Turner. As you know, why did they keep him is the question I think a lot of people in Atlanta are still asking.
Yes.
When they took over that franchise, there were even warning signs, even in those early days that Waddell's drafts were not, were not yielding any talent. And even at that stage, they should have recognized that they should have gone in a different direction. And by continuing to keep him, it sends a strong message to the fan base that, hey, we just don't care. And if you're don't expect your customers to care if you yourself don't care about putting on a winning product.
Yeah, and we're going to get into more of that too. The ownership deals, the product on the ice. But let's dive a little deeper into the drafts. We cannot deny that he didn't make some good picks. Danny Heatley, and we'll get more into his story in just a bit. Ilya Kovalchuk, Kari Lehtinen, Patrick Stefan, to name a few. But he did miss a lot. Can it all be blamed on him? I mean, was there no scouting department? Why did he make some of these selections after the first round, particularly after the first round that he did? Where was he getting his information? I mean, some of what he drafted is just mind-boggling.
Well, you mentioned about scouting and everything. These are scouts that he hired. I mean, these are, he doesn't have anybody to blame but himself. I mean, one draft choice comes to mind. I think it was a pick that he got in the it was a Marian Hossa trade. He got an extra first round pick. And he picked a guy named Dalton Levaille. His highlight of his career was he spent 12 games in the AHL with Hamilton, and today he's a firefighter here in St. Catharines, where I live. Yeah, I mean that's not exactly getting good value from your picks. And again, as I mentioned, wherever he was getting his information from, he's the guy that the scouts are the ones that he hired, and he's the one going to the draft table and announcing the picks. In the book, I made a lot of comparison to John Ferguson with the original Jets, because I know it was so much closer to me. I haven't been a Jets season ticket holder for 5 years, and John Ferguson was a failed general manager. He was he produced two winning seasons out of 9 full years in the job, and was fired largely because of his draft record. But yet even he managed to unearth some quality players in rounds 4 and 5, and later, Thomas Steen come to mind. He was one of the two players who had his jersey retired by the Jets, and maybe he was a 5th or 6th round draft choice. And yet, Don Waddell just got absolutely nothing beyond, say top 5. I mean, in which, you or I could have been the general manager and come up with some of those picks, like Danny Heatley or Ilya Kovalchuk.
Yeah, I remember Ferguson. I'm a New York Rangers fan, and he certainly didn't do the Rangers a whole lot of favors when he was with the team back in the mid-70s. He was the one that actually I think he was the one that actually took the word Rangers off their jersey and put their shield on their jersey, and it just was not the same hockey team at that time.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, you know, you mentioned that it's that style of uniform that he put on the Jets uniform after they were admitted into the NHL.
But the
one positive that he did for the Rangers is that he signed Anders Hedberg and Ulf Nilsson away from the Jets.
Yep, and that's a whole other story. Well, so the drafts are one thing, and you basically touched on this part before as well. One of the biggest issues, it's, look, every team has to deal with injuries. But the way you describe the rash of injuries Atlanta faced on a yearly basis, especially their first years, is just incredible. I mean, look, I don't know if there's an explanation for this, but what was going on? Curtis, I mean, the groins, the soft tissue injuries. At what point does somebody say something, you know, this isn't right? And, you know, I even look at it today. I'm a huge New York Football Giants fan. And my gosh, that team is always leading the league in injuries. And to me, there's got to be something, if it's a continual experience for a franchise, it's got to be one of two things. It's got to be your training staff is not doing something right, or the playing surface from your home arena, or in football, your home stadium, there's got to be something wrong. What is the explanation? Is there an explanation? How did the Thrashers address this?
Well, they didn't address it, and that's the thing. I mean, you know, it's so glaringly obvious, and yet, you know, I mean, it's got to be the, you know, like the, because, you know, I've heard nothing that the ice at Phillips Arena was horrible, that they had a state-of-the-art practice facility. You know, it was just the groin injuries, especially with goaltenders. I mean, that's, you know, you just, you know, I've heard it said that, you know, from personal trainers and stuff, you know, they can work with seniors and have them do the right stretching and avoid these, you know, getting hamstring pulls. You know, they certainly can do it with professional athletes. And it's whether it was, you know, a combination of the training staff not pushing the guys or the players themselves, but again that responsibility lies solely with the general manager, and it's just, as you said, it's just mind-boggling how he kept his job for so long. I mean, Don Waddell may not be the worst general manager to have ever walked the face of the earth, but few general managers get the opportunity to show off their incompetence for so long in the job, and to the point where it becomes a major factor in the relocation of the team.
All right. What about free agency and convincing players to come to Atlanta? What stopped top talent from coming to Atlanta? Was it strictly the team's performance on the ice? Was it Atlanta itself? Why was it so hard to build a team there?
Well, you know, as far as, you know, free agency, I mean, and you know, in later years they didn't have a big budget. I mean, that's a factor. I mean, the ownership was just, you know, they were spending more time battling among themselves than they were trying to battle other teams. But you know, players want to win. I mean, of course they want money, but you know, I think, you know, their players' time in the NHL is comparatively shorter in any sport, you know, at the highest level. Your time there is very short, and you know, in addition to being wanting to be paid well, you want to be able to pick a good situation to go to work, just like anybody else on the, you know, the, any working stiff who, you know, going out to a regular job. And, you know, it's the Thrashers had virtually no chance to win. It was so far off the radar that it almost, you know, it must have felt like you weren't even in the NHL. So, you know, even like with Ilya Kovalchuk, when he became a free agent, or at least he in his last year of his contract when they were trying to re-sign him, Atlanta offered him, a huge contract. It was almost the largest contract they could have offered him under the collective bargaining agreement, and even then he didn't want it. Because why bother? I mean, it's that's when they traded him to New Jersey, and he went on from there.
Yeah. Let me and we're going to get more into Ilya's story in just a bit as well. Let me ask you this, especially in the beginning. What about the fans? How was this team accepted or not by the fans in Atlanta? And what made the NHL think a team could make it in the Atlanta market, especially after the Flames failed there?
Well, from what I understand, that there's a lot of people in Atlanta when the Flames were there, it was sort of a southern city. When the Thrashers got an expansion team, there have been a lot of, you know, people from northern states that had moved south, and it was described as sort of a more of a northern city in the south. So there was a real possibility that this could, you know, that the Thrashers could have been a real success story. And initially they were accepted. They were drawing large crowds. Like a lot of southern cities, it's a competitive sports marketplace. And when you don't treat your customers well, when you don't show that there's any hope for any winning or I've even heard about ownership even giving away free tickets to customers and or dealing with fans, and then longtime season ticket holders are who are being gouged and they're sitting next to people who get in on a free ticket. Well, how does that make you feel? And then that's why fans just started. I think even right to their last day, that people cared, but just that why bother if you're just going to be being treated that way? People have other things to do, and they'll spend their money elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. Why did the Flames not make it in Atlanta? You talked about how back in their time it was more of a southern city, but I also recall reading something about the way their arena, I think they played in the Omni, the way their arena was set up. There was I don't think they had luxury boxes. They it was tough to sell to corporations. Why did the Flames fail?
The Flames were, as I mentioned about, it was more of a southern city at the time. Population wasn't as large as it is today, and they had ownership that had a little bit of problems with financing, and the Omni wasn't a bad rink, but as you mentioned, they didn't have the luxury boxes, so that the revenue wasn't there. It's not that nobody cared, but it was, I guess, probably the better thing to say is not enough people cared. And then that's even though they had winning teams, but they never really got, you know, sort of beyond the first round of the playoffs. And that's just year in, year out, and they're just kind of flying by the seat of their pants. And then that's the ownership lost patience and sold out to the Calgary group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember the Atlanta Flames. They were always a solid team. They were a pesky team, but like you say, they never went far in the playoffs. And obviously, the Thrashers never went far in the playoffs. Their first 3 years were not pretty. Their first year, they were 14-57-7. This is when the NHL didn't have overtime, for those listening. Their second year, they did get a little bit better. They went 23-45-12. And then their third year, they took another step backwards, going 19-47-11. The coach, Kurt Frazier, a friend of Waddell's, was fired towards the end of that third season. Waddell went behind the bench for a few games. He didn't do all that bad. But then he hired Bob Hartley, who won the Stanley Cup with the Colorado Avalanche. How good a hire was this? And what did it mean to the franchise to bring in a coach of Bob Hartley's stature?
It invigorated the fan base a little bit, and he was clearly much more of a professional than Frazier. Bob Hartley isn't sort of the second coming of Scotty Bowman, but he was pretty good. He was good with the media. He had always had a good quip. Even in his broken English, and he sort of cracked the whip a little bit, and got the team out of the doldrums, and with a few more additions, Heedley and Kovalchuk, and he got them to win, and at least as much as the Thrashers could win with the talent they had, and then got them to their one and only playoff berth, in which they promptly were swept by the Rangers, and then never saw the playoffs again. And of course, the following season after Don Waddell let a lot of the players go, then I think it was six games into the following season, then he fired Hartley, and then that was the beginning of the end.
Yeah, I mean, Hartley comes in. The Thrashers' best season to that point was their second year when they went 23-45. Hartley's first year, the team wins the most games it had ever won. They went 31-39-7 for 74 points and finished in third place in what was then known as the Southeast Division. The following year, they get really close to qualifying for the playoffs, finishing second in the division, going 33-37-8, and then came the lockout year. They come back, and they have their best season ever. 2005-2006 season, the Thrashers go 41-33, and this is when we get into overtime games and all that. They go 41-33-8, and they finish third in the East. Then 2006-2007, they win the Southeast, winning 43 games and losing 28. They play the Rangers in the first round of the playoffs. They do get swept. And then, like you said, the following year, six, seven games into the season, whatever it was, they're not playing well. They had, a little bit of player turnover during the offseason. And Waddell lets Hartley go. Was that a fair thing to do? Was it fair to let Hartley go? Was his message lost on the players? What happened there?
Yeah, no, I mean, that was completely unfair. See, what happened the previous year, the one that they where they did make the playoffs, is Waddell traded a lot of draft choices and young players to get that one big run to get to the playoffs. So he traded for Keith Kachuk, comes to mind, Scott Mellenby, guys that, veteran players. And in fact, at the time when they were in that playoff series, even though the Thrashers had not, the franchise had never been in the playoffs before, the team was actually, I think the oldest in the NHL. So it wasn't, from lack of experience. And yet, the first two games of that series were competitive, but it went to Madison Square Garden, and then they just pretty much mailed it in. And then, what happened after that is that Keith Kachuk was a free agent. They had no plans to re-sign him. And, a number of other players had left. It was a conscious decision that, they were going to have to sort of start another rebuilding track. And then, that's obviously not Bob Hartley's fault. And, he had a younger team, and I don't know that anyone could have done a better job.
Yeah, you had said just now that they were one of the oldest teams in the NHL at this point. Well, off the ice, the Thrashers were not doing well. They were bleeding money to the tune of about $20 million a year. Ted Turner, who owned the team, needed to sell it. So he did. And a consortium consisting of three different groups bought the team. They were known as the Atlanta Spirit. And this this consortium was sort of doomed from the start. I mean, it was a disaster. Talk about that sale and how it also shaped the inevitable. This consortium couldn't get along, and the fact that the Thrashers were losing so much money was just, again, I'll use the term, mind-boggling. There was a ridiculous edict placed on Waddell that he can't sign players to a contract for more than 1 year. One of the owners in the consortium was a guy by the name of Steve Belkin, and somehow he was bought out. I don't know if I'm going to get my facts mixed up here, but he was bought out. But even though he was bought out, the team still had to consult with him about management decisions. I mean, this was a mess. Can you talk about this whole deal here?
Yeah, that was an epic mess. That when the Atlanta Spirit took over, they were a group of initially well-meaning group. They had different guys. There was a guy in Atlanta called them the Great Octo Cluster. There was eight of them. That goes to some a guy named Bill Tiller. He was a frequent poster on one of those message boards at the time. I don't want to plagiarize his comments. I'll just give him credit. But yeah, Steve Belkin had a share, and these other guys had shares. I think Ted Turner's son was involved, and there's all these other guys, but. The problem was that and Belkin wanted out, and there was dispute as to how much share of the group that the appraisal of the share and he wanted some control, and it was the lawsuits galore within the ownership group. And it's also important to note that this group also owned the Atlanta Hawks of the NBA, and I think they owned Phillips, or at least had the management rights to Phillips Arena. So mm-hmm. Belkin had been meddling in the affairs of the Atlanta Hawks. There was a trade involving some player that he vetoed or something. So it was all this infighting. And so, and even court documents later revealed that I think as early as 2005, that they were trying to unload the Thrashers. But, you know, and, you know, people, you know, who aren't familiar with the situation look at this as saying, well, you know, when the Thrasher did ultimately go up for sales, well, nobody stepped forward, or looked, you know, they've been for sale for so long, nobody wanted them, so that's why they ended up moving. But, you know, because everything was so tied up in litigation, you know, anybody who really wanted to buy the Thrashers couldn't. I mean, they were legally, they could not have sold the team if they wanted to. And so, you know, it was just, and then when they finally, you know, years later, they finally resolved all this, then, you know, you're getting a product that it's almost becomes like a fire sale. And, you know, it's basically anybody that they just pretty much took the first offer that came, because the throughout the Atlanta Spirits years, it was obvious that they were just managing not to hold down the losses, as opposed to trying to build a winning product. And that doesn't, the fans aren't stupid, they know that, and that certainly didn't help, you know, attendance and fans rallying to try to save the team.
Mm-hmm. What was there a lot of fan support? Did fans ever turn out to see the Thrashers play?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I mean, even though, you know, I mean, the Thrashers attendance was still higher than a lot of other markets in the NHL, and frankly, I mean, including Winnipeg in the old Winnipeg Arena. Being a non-traditional hockey market, there's not as many fans, maybe hockey fans per capita, as there is in, say, a place like Winnipeg. But it didn't mean that there weren't a lot of good dedicated fans that to this day would still welcome and support an NHL franchise. As one of the columnists in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution put it, Atlanta didn't fail the Thrashers. The Thrashers failed Atlanta.
Hmm. Well, one good move that was made after the team was sold was the overhaul of the scouting department. And as we said earlier, the Thrashers never seemed to get the draft right or free agency right. Yet, you think they didn't go far enough with the overhaul. Talk about that.
Well, I mean, Waddell was still around. I mean, and that's, you know, he was still the president of the team, and that's the... You know, that doesn't, you know, I mean, he just became a toxic figure, and, you know, they just needed to get rid of him, period. But, you know, Rick Dudley did what he could. And, you know, even though he was kind of another friend of Waddell, but, you know, in the last couple of years, he had a shoestring budget, and, you know, 2 or 3 years really isn't enough to really evaluate a general manager. I think if Rick Dudley had been given a bigger budget and more autonomy, I think, you know, he could have built a quality team, but he never really got that opportunity.
Right. So Waddell was moved up. Dudley comes in, becomes a general manager. Okay. Off the ice, the team is sold. Not a great sale, as we've gone through. An overhaul of the scouting staff. Coming off a pretty solid second half of the previous season with some players whom you could build around, the Thrashers appear to finally be heading in the right direction. Yet, there is a serious off-ice incident. It can't get any more serious than this. Danny Heatley and Dan Snyder. Tragedy. One you really can't recover from. Tell us what happened.
Well, yeah, the two of them were out, I think, at a season ticket holder event, and Heatley was driving his Ferrari, and one of those young and stupid things, and you know, I think it was going about 80 miles an hour down a residential street and crashed, and Dan Snyder was thrown from the car and later died in hospital. I had the opportunity to visit his grave a few years ago. I think that certainly didn't help the team on the ice. Initially, I think, they sort of drew some strength, but in time, it definitely hurt them. And losing Heatley for a while too. I mean, Heatley was seriously injured, and he missed most of the year. But as far as the hockey perspective, I mean, it actually may have helped them because they end up trading Heatley for Marian Hossa, who's probably more of a complete player. It's just that the problem is they didn't surround him with a lot of extra, with the talent they needed. But going back to the actual incident, I heard about the Ferrari, even a race car. Heatley bought it in cash from a race car driver, and even the race car driver mentioned that it's difficult to handle, and because such power in a Ferrari, and if you're not an experienced driver, Heatley was a young man, and got away from him, and tragedy resulted.
Yeah, and right. So Snyder loses his life. I mean, obviously it's stupid to say it. This is just something you can't recover from. But the mental effect that it had on Heatley was pretty bad. I mean, he ultimately asked to be traded, and like you said, he was traded to Ottawa for Marian Hossa. I don't know if you know the answer to this question. Heatley, when he was traded, at that point, he was required for community service to fulfill these community service hours. And at that point when he was traded, those hours hadn't been fulfilled. Do you know if he ever did fulfill those community service hours?
The answer is, I believe the answer is yes. But I think the fans in Atlanta resented the fact that he didn't do them in Fulton County and he did them in Calgary, where he's from.
Okay.
And that was the thing, and that's why he got booed every time that he got Heatley played in Atlanta after the trade. After the trade, fans didn't really hold it against him, and they were very supportive. And it was Heatley the one wanted out, and after being so supportive, and then he asked out, I think that was all part of it too. Why there was resentment after the fact.
Mm-hmm. All right, time to get back to on the ice and Don Waddell. Atlanta long had been one of the league's doormats, always having a top pick. New management comes in, and it applauds Waddell's efforts and reward him with a new contract. I don't understand how this can be. I went back, did a little bit of research on Atlanta's drafting, and as you pointed out earlier, they didn't do awful in the first round. I had Patrick Stefan in 1999, Danny Heatley in 2000, Ilya Kovalchuk in 2001, Kerry Lehtinen in 2002. It's what they did in the subsequent rounds that really set the stage for their failures. Excruciating misses. Sure, other teams missed too, but Atlanta missed every year, every round. Other teams didn't. Where was the breakdown? How did this happen? And how did ownership continue to let this happen? What was it about Don Waddell that ownership said, this guy is the guy we need to keep?
Well, I mean, if I had to, I think there's a lot of people in Atlanta still asking that question. Part of it could have been money. He was already under contract, so it costs money to buy him. The general manager is obviously highly paid. But, you know, and also, you know, I touched on this earlier, but I think, you know, it's worthy of exploration that their farm with their farm team is that, you know, that what little talent they were able to that may have had a chance to help the Thrashers just was not developed at all in Chicago, where they had their farm team. The Chicago Wolves were an old IHL team. They were for the longest time they were independent, and the ownership was always big on, you know, on obviously they wanted to win, and winning came above development. And then when the IHL folded and the Chicago Wolves moved to the AHL, they needed an NHL parent team, and that turned out to be the Thrashers. And they got a lot of players from the Thrashers, but the Wolves management still operated independently, and again they were more worried about winning than they worried about developing prospects for the Thrashers, and you know, Don Waddell didn't force the issue here, And so you had not only the Thrashers themselves were dysfunctional with their ownership, but they might have had one of the most dysfunctional relationships of all time with their own farm team. And when you can't even control what goes on in your own farm team, and you know, and your own, you know, boardrooms inside your own ownership group, well, frankly, it's surprising that the Thrashers weren't the worst team in the league every single year. That they actually made the playoffs one year is somewhat remarkable.
Well, you know, and that's a really good point. So, you know, we blame a lot of the roster construction of the Thrashers on Waddell. And I think one question that definitely needs to be asked here, while he didn't make the greatest draft picks, he did somehow assemble one of the oldest rosters in the league, as we talked about earlier. But what role, what responsibility does management, ownership, need to play in this? I mean, how much did they affect Waddell's ability financially to put together a good team?
Well, in the later years, that certainly was a factor. But in the early years, you know, with Ted Turner's ownership, Don Waddell freely admitted that he had complete control. He had a very generous budget. You know, he didn't have some meddling owner telling him what to do, and even the Atlanta Spirit, I have no reason to believe that they were telling him who to draft, or, you know, it was just, I mean, there were more financial constraints later years, but you know, he had the freedom to do this, you know, to you know, construct the roster. It was more of you know, maybe management was again maybe afraid to have to you know, they're just financially not able to sort of buy out his contract, so that they could bring in somebody new. And many fans you know, in Atlanta even, we make the suggestion that, and it's hard to argue that the ownership, by keeping Waddell, were deliberately trying to sabotage the franchise for a future sale. And you know, that's a strong allegation to make. But you look at the history of this franchise, and you know, if that's really what they were trying to do, what would they be trying to do differently? Probably nothing.
Explain, if you can, how Atlanta's roster, after just a few years, became a roster filled with aging talent, and how this also contributed to the demise of the team and its days in the South.
Well, I mean, Waddell was desperate to try to get into the playoffs. I mean, that's something that they really had to, you know, he felt that he, you know, that was a must. And then when he finally got it, like in 2006, 2007 season, he got a team that felt could make a run. So that's why he, you know, sort of, you know, whereas in earlier years, you know, you work for the, you know, develop for the future. At that point, you know, he did the, you know, the George Allen line, and, you know, the future is now. So that's why he, you know, traded away some young players and draft choices for to get a team that can make a run. And of course, you know, as the history has shown, that run lasted all four games. And then after that, you know, the players left as free agents, and then you know, they had to start all over again. And that, you know, that would have been a perfect chance, you know, for ownership to cut the cord with Waddell, and, you know, let a new man come in and develop a new rebuilding program. And of course, didn't do it. And then Don Waddell fired Hartley, and you know, it just never got better.
Yeah, you know, as the years started to pass, the fans started to catch on, and they started to protest the incompetence here, from unfair ticket practices to the product on the ice. And like I said, the unfair ticket practices, in which season ticket holders weren't offered the same discounts as single game ticket purchasers, to the incompetence of staging, you wrote about this, a whiteout at home, only to find the Thrashers didn't tell the opposition that they were going to wear white at home and hand out white shirts to everybody that comes into the arena so they could do this whiteout. So the visiting team wears white and the Thrashers had to wear their blue. Fans started to show up wearing bags over their heads. Talk about how the fans started to get frustrated at this point.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the fact that they even still had fans is still pretty, you know, by this point is you know, I think shows that, you know, the people still did care. I mean, there was someone that had that even started a website called FireWaddell.com. It's still available in at archive.org for anybody wants to go see what was on there. And there was even a one game they hung a sign that says, you know, Atlanta Spirit stinks, and they, you know, they highlighted the ASS on the, you know, for the, of the acronym there. So that was
yeah, that's pretty funny stuff. They'd caught on, but, you know, again, in all fairness, in a way, his hands, in a way, were tied. You know, before the 2010-2011 season, he was incredibly promoted to be the team president. That's when they brought in Rick Dudley as the new general manager. But there was something going on off the ice, too. I mean, there is this lawsuit that's going on between all the owners. What was it all about? You know, we touched upon it. What was it all about? And again, how did this affect the team's ability to improve the product on the ice?
Well, yeah, Steve Belkin, I think, wanted out, and he, you know, there was a dispute as to the appraised value of the team. So, you know, as to how much, you know, the other owners should pay him for the value, and you know, there, and then Belkin went to court to try to stop, you know, I think, you know, put a hamstring on management. And you touched on this, that judge initially said that, you know, they couldn't sign a player for more than 1 year, but then they later, you know, I think both parties agreed that, you know, they let him sign a player for 4 years. And you know, I mean, it, you know, as far as the concern, I mean, they, you know, they're hockey players, they just want to play. But it sends a horrible message that when you can't even get along among yourself, it's just, you know, it's sort of like, why bother? You know, it doesn't exactly make it a, you know, a good work environment or a good environment for fans. It's just, after all that, it was no wonder nobody really wanted to buy the team after all, you know, once all that was settled.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the product on the ice, the Thrashers definitely had some good players, but they had one superstar, and a superstar, Ilya Kovalchuk. I mean, the guy was just flat out one of the best players in the NHL. His rookie year, wins the Calder Trophy. 29 goals, 38 goals, 41 goals, 52 goals, 42 goals, 52 goals, 43 goals. And midway through the 2009-2010 season, Kovalchuk had enough. He even got the team to sign one of his buddies, Nick Andropov, but he decided he'd had enough, and the Thrashers weren't going to re-sign him, and midway through the 2009-2010 season, the Thrashers traded him to the New Jersey Devils. To me, that was really the final nail in the coffin. To me, that signaled the end to the Atlanta Thrashers franchise. And, it was just a couple seasons later, or actually one season later, would be their final season in Atlanta. Talk about the trade and why Ilya didn't re-sign with the Atlanta Thrashers.
Yeah, well, you mentioned that the Thrashers weren't going to re-sign him. I mean, they had tried to re-sign him. I mean, they had been working for a couple of years. I mean, the fact that when they ultimately traded him, that didn't just sort of come out of the blue. They had offered him a huge contract. I think, as I mentioned, I think one of the largest contracts they could have offered him under the collective bargaining agreement. But he didn't dislike playing in Atlanta, but he wanted to win, and he wanted to play for a good team. And even at that point, there was rumors that the team was going to be relocating to Winnipeg. And I've heard that one of the reasons he didn't re-sign with Atlanta was that he didn't want to end up in Winnipeg. And not that maybe Winnipeg wouldn't have wanted him either, because I'm not, more from a financial perspective, because the team is entirely dependent on government handouts. Ilya Kovalchuk's departure was not, I mean, you know, it itself didn't, it wasn't the, what got, you know, what ultimately set the relocation in motion, but it was probably more the final nail in the coffin. And again, it's just another, the last man leaving the Thrashers turn out the lights.
Well, he's gone. Between the 2009-10 season and the 2010-11 season is when Waddell was promoted. Oh, yeah. to team president, and that's when they brought in Rick Dudley. Now, Dudley made some trades, didn't have a lot of luck in the draft, but he did, through the trades, plant some seeds for a solid foundation, only that foundation would thrive elsewhere, namely Winnipeg. The 2010-11 season wound up being the last of the Thrashers' existence. Tell us about that final year in Atlanta, the rumors of the team moving, the sale, how it affected the players. We obviously know that it affected Ilya Kovalchuk greatly, so much so that he got out of Atlanta. And then the move to Winnipeg. Talk about that final season.
Well, you know, I mean, and there was a, you know, there was an ominous sign earlier in that year when Andrei Pavlik collapsed on the ice. You know, I mean, he was okay, but you know, then they had to, you know, stop the game and everything, and you just all of a sudden out of the blue just collapsed. That was pretty, you know, maybe that was a foreshadowing of what to come. But you know, Rick Dudley actually did a half decent job getting, you know, sort of on a shoestring budget, getting a team together that had a, you know, sort of a fighting chance at a playoff spot. Not that that's anything to be, you know, proud of, but under the circumstances, he did an admirable job. And as you noted, he brought in some good players that that would later thrive in Winnipeg. But yeah, it was almost like, you know, sort of I think a lot of people knew the end was coming, and it was just. But I think there's also some, to this day, it's still a little hard to believe that the NHL would actually have abandoned the eighth largest market in the U.S. for the eighth largest in Canada.
I gotta ask you, Curtis, why did the NHL let happen to Atlanta happen as opposed to making every effort to save it like they did and continue to do with Arizona?
Yeah, you know, I at the time, sitting in Winnipeg at the time, I was asking myself that very question. And Gary Bettman, and to his credit, in other markets, there's been bankruptcies and ownership issues in Buffalo, Pittsburgh, and literally been bending over backwards to keep the franchise in Arizona. And that's what Gary Bettman should do. I mean, you should make an effort to keep, you know, teams in existing cities, and relocation should only be the option of last resort. And it's almost as if it was so odd that the NHL in 1996 couldn't get out of Winnipeg fast enough, and then, in 2011, they're abandoning what could have been a real success story with proper ownership in Atlanta, to go back to a market that is still, very much a market of a very dedicated fans. I haven't been one of them. Winnipeg is a city that is pretty much dependent on the big industry in Winnipeg is government. They don't have the corporate support. It's the eighth largest market in Canada, in a country whose dollar is about depending on the daily fluctuation rate, but worth about 30% less than its U.S. counterpart. I don't get it.
Yeah.
I still don't.
Why do you think Atlanta, or why do you think the NHL, the Atlanta Spirit, Ted Turner, whomever, couldn't find someone locally in Atlanta to say, I want this team here? Why couldn't they find someone to buy the team? What do you think was the reason, or why did they have so much trouble finding someone to say, I want the Thrashers, I want to keep them here in Atlanta? Why'd they have such trouble finding someone to buy the team and keep it there?
Well, as far as, going back to Ted Turner, many people in the Atlanta Spirit Group were local. So, that was a, they initially professed to want to keep the team. But as far as, you know, at the end, it became such a mess that, you know, they really didn't allow a lot of time. I mean, yes, the Atlanta Spirit Group had been trying to unload the team since 2005, but they because of all the litigation, they weren't able to sell. So, you know, they really didn't give, you know, anyone a lot. You know, this is, you know, selling a $100 million asset is not something that you just, you know, this is a transaction that takes time to develop. And they really didn't give a lot of time, you know, post litigation, for an ownership group to step forward, and that's where Gary Bettman should have stepped in, and sort of you know, at least given them another year to sort of get beyond all that bickering. You know, especially, you know, with a new general manager in place and give them that opportunity, and you know, the NHL had a stake in that because, you know, say Atlanta is a large media market, and they hurt themselves by abandoning it, and, you know, may have lost it forever, and that's the, you know, to very much to their detriment, and then, you know, and of course, you know, the Mark Chipman's group was willing to pounce along with the government money, and that's why they're in Winnipeg today.
Mm-hmm. Well, you look back at the Thrashers, you look back at their history, 12 seasons in Atlanta. Granted, they only played 11 because of the lockout. They won the Southeast Division one time. They made the playoffs only one time. They got swept by the Rangers. They did have a couple of good seasons where they were on the brink of the playoffs. They had some good players come through there, you know, Kovalchuk, Heatley, Andrew Burnett, Patrick Stefan, Kelly Buchberger, Ray Ferraro, even Chris Chelios, Marian Hossa, Bobby Olie, Kerry Lehtinen. I mean, they had some good players come through there. When you look back at the history of the Atlanta Thrashers, oh, and by the way, they did have some good fan support, as we talked about. What is the legacy of the Atlanta Thrashers?
Boy, you know, if you're looking for a how not to model and how to run a franchise, that's it. I mean, that's probably the best thing I can say.
Yeah. They were just one of those teams that unfortunately was a poorly run franchise, and that might have cost them their location and getting out of Atlanta, even though it placed such a burden on the people of Winnipeg, was probably the best thing for the franchise. Else, you know, that franchise might have just folded up, and, you know, those players would have, all the players on the team would be playing elsewhere. Curtis, I want to thank you so much for spending so much time with me to talk about the Atlanta Thrashers, a team that had a couple of good seasons, like we said, only made the playoffs one time, might have been one of the more poorly run, definitely one of the more poorly run franchises in the history of the NHL, but have recovered. And the Winnipeg Jets are a solid team. And thank you so much for joining me here on Sports Forgotten Heroes.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a, you know, the Thrashers are an interesting story, and it's you know, I you know, as I wrote in the book, I had never been a fan of theirs. I had never set foot in the state of Georgia, but you know, the Manitoba government put me on the playing field when they dug into my pocket to buy the franchise, and you know, the more I looked into it, the more similarity that I think, you know, fans of the Jets fans have with people in Atlanta who having lost a team because of having suffered through bad ownership. I definitely identified with them and still do.
Absolutely. Well, again, Curtis, thank you so much for being a part of Sports Forgotten Heroes.
Thank you.
When you look back at the history of the Thrashers, it's really a shame that ownership couldn't get its act together and that the management of the team missed so often in the draft. Even worse is that after the Thrashers moved to Winnipeg, the team started to make good draft choices. The team has been able to attract good free agents, and the Jets have made some very solid trades. They've been a very competitive franchise, and the team gets terrific support from its community. As for Atlanta, personally, with the Flames having to leave town and moving to Calgary, and then the Jets leaving for Winnipeg, or the Thrashers leaving for Winnipeg, I don't think the NHL will be looking to put a team there again. And as Curtis said, that's a shame, because there were signs that the city of Atlanta could support a National Hockey League franchise. But in this case, two strikes and you're out. I want to thank Curtis again for spending time with us to talk about the Thrashers. You can get his book, Broken Wings, online, or just go to sportsfh.com, where I have a link to that book and many, many more to make ordering easy. Please give Curtis your support. As always, thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time on Sports Forgotten Heroes.
Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Each week, the official Football Learning Academy podcast will take you deep into the history of pro football through interviews with players, coaches, or administrators in the NFL, as well as interviews with Pro Football Hall of Fame selectors, authors, and historians. You'll learn how the game evolved and important moments that shaped the sport into what it is today. And don't miss the Pro Football History Nugget of the Week. Listen to the official Football Learning Academy podcast on the Sports History Network.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcast. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcast. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.